In the throes of a mental health breakdown, even familiar places can feel threatening or overwhelming. Yet often the only place to get treatment for a psychiatric crisis is a hospital emergency department, a place full of stressed out strangers, bright lights, and all kinds of noise. It's not that ERs were designed to harm people experiencing acute mental illnesses. It's just they weren't really designed to care for these folks either. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. There are alternatives to making people with severe psychiatric symptoms wait their turn alongside accident victims and people struggling to breathe. When set up properly, specialized spaces for mental health emergency patients not only can prevent a lot of overnight admissions, they also allow the ER to serve as a source of comfort rather than trauma. Dhruv Kular is an assistant professor at Weill Cornell Medical College and a contributing writer at The New Yorker, which published his article, Reinventing the ER for America's Mental Health Crisis. Dhruv, welcome back to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
You write here about a therapist named Kim Mittling who was motivated to study psychology in part because she had a family member who had experienced a number of mental health emergencies over the years. So Kim, I guess, just really wanted to be able to help people in their worst moments.
That's right. So Kim is a really a wonderful clinician who works at one of the empath units that I visited. And she got interested in the space because one of her family members had a significant mental health crisis while she was in college. And because of that, Kim decided to change her major to psychology. She ended up training as actually a family and marriage counselor, but was just drawn to psychiatric emergencies given her prior experience. And during that experience, she found that the mental health care system didn't have a lot of options for her and her family member. It felt very fragmented. Often people would just give her numbers to call on behalf of her family member. And so she wanted to do something that might create a better environment for people who are experiencing mental health crises.
So the first job she got caring for emergent patients was in this urban hospital in Minnesota. How did she describe the portion of the ER set aside there for mental health patients?
That's right. So her first job, she started in 2014, and she was a therapist in this emergency department. And it was kind of a typical emergency department. It was not the type of space that she works in now, but basically it was a chaotic environment. There were a lot of challenging medical problems, strokes, heart attacks, gunshot wounds, car accidents, that type of thing. And so she would walk through all this chaos and she would get to the mental health suite, which was kind of a locked unit with a security guard inside. And there was five very Spartan rooms, and each room had one patient in it. And there's a plexiglass behind which was a television. And the patients were really supposed to stay inside their rooms. There wasn't a lot for them to do in there. At the same time, there was often many more than just five patients who needed this type of psychiatric care in the emergency room. So people would be spilling out into the hallways. Maybe there would be 10, 15, 20 patients at a time. And she would just have to cycle through these patients 10 or 15 minutes at a time, make a very quick assessment if they were safe to leave or if they weren't safe to leave, if they presented a danger to themselves or others. If they were psychiatrically unstable, then they would have to wait in the emergency department, usually until a psychiatric bed was available at a nearby hospital. And during that time, you know, a lot of people got worse. As you can imagine, if you're having a mental health crisis, if you're struggling with substance use, if you're experiencing suicidal thoughts, if you're experiencing psychosis, this type of chaotic environment, this type of isolation, environment is not going to be one that's going to be very healing for you. And so she kind of grew quite frustrated with the experience over time.
Yeah, her patients sometimes told her they felt like they were in jail.
That's right. And one of the things that happens in an emergency room, particularly when people come in with psychiatric emergencies, is that they're really stripped of their autonomy. And so that's in part done to keep them safe. You know, you don't necessarily want people who are having a really challenging time, feeling unwell, to be walking around the emergency department, potentially interfering with care of their own or others. But because of that, they basically have to ask nurses or other clinicians for everything. If they want to use the bathroom, they have to ask. If they want some food, if they want water, if they want a pillow, any of these things, they need to ask. And so that's kind of the experience of people who are in the emergency room. And that's why they kind of say it often feels like they are in jail. And in some cases, in severe cases, if someone is posing some type of danger or is unable to follow instructions, they may in fact be isolated in a room or even tethered to kind of a bedside rail if they're at risk for leaving or if they're at risk for harming themselves.
I mean, nobody in any health crisis finds an ER relaxing exactly, but it's almost as if emergency departments are set up to agitate people who are experiencing a mental breakdown.
Well, as you said, they're not meant for people experiencing psychiatric challenges. I mean, emergency rooms are very good at kind of what they're built to do. And, emergency rooms have been built to handle things like strokes and heart attacks, various forms of trauma. They have protocols in place. They get people stabilized and move them on to either outpatient care or they're admitted to the hospital. In that way, they're very effective. But when it comes to the type of care that's important for patients with mental health problems, whether that's counseling, therapy, starting certain types of medications, creating a calm environment for people to be in and recover, those are the types of things that are very challenging for emergency departments to do. And the other thing I'll note is that most emergency room clinicians are not trained specifically in mental health care. A lot of them, didn't go into the field to provide mental health care. ER residencies don't have much mental health training. At the same time, now one in every eight patients who comes into the emergency room is having some type of mental health problem. So it's really becoming more and more a part of what these clinicians do.
You share in this piece that you felt a great deal of stress working in the ER as a physician. Like there were times when you went home and found it hard, even as a mentally healthy person, to shake off the stress of the day.
That's right. And, part of that is kind of a moral distress of wanting to do more for your patients than you're able to do. When you're working in an emergency room, part of what you're doing is prioritizing people by the acuity of the need. And when people are in very visible types of pain, if they've fractured a bone or if they're having crushing chest pressure, their vital signs are unstable, obviously that feels like where you need to be and you need to manage that situation as quickly as possible. People experiencing mental health crises often are in less visible types of pain. They are struggling internally, and they're not often at risk for immediate decompensation in terms of their heart rate or their blood pressure. And they often are treated, with less urgency because of that, because there's so much else going on. But that's certainly not helpful for them. And so, we do need a better form of caring for people who are coming in with these types of conditions.
So a little more than 2 years ago, Kim found this job at another hospital that had a specialized unit for mental health emergencies that you referred to called an empath unit. When you visited this empath unit for the first time, what stood out to you just about the design of the physical space?
Well, it's totally different than the emergency room. It's totally different than what I think most people would think of when they enter into a clinical setting. It really feels like a library or maybe an airport lounge. There's floor-to-ceiling windows. There's natural light that comes in through these windows. There's murals on most of the walls. The murals have things like tree branches, green leaves, blue skies, the sun. The nurses are not kind of secluded in their own area, but actually sitting out among the patients. There's kind of a snack bar that people can go to. There's books and games on the shelves. There's TVs that people are watching. It really feels like a much more communal and relaxing atmosphere. If someone wants a blanket, there's a kind of a blanket warmer that they can go get one. One of the most interesting things that I noted was that there's actually an exercise bike in there. And so someone has a lot of manic energy, they can use that exercise bike. They have a shower that people can use as well. And so it's a very, very different environment than what you might experience in an emergency room where there's bells and alarms and people are rushing from one place to another. People aren't necessarily getting a lot of one-on-one attention. This is kind of the opposite of that. And so it really struck me as a type of clinical setting that I had not ever been in before.
Even the idea that the patients were given recliners to hang out in rather than being encouraged to sit or lie down in a bed is interesting.
That's right. And so, you know, there's a set in this empath unit, there were 16 recliners, 15 or 16 recliners, and they were kind of flatbed recliners. And so you could be sitting up or you could, you know, lie all the way down. People were watching television or they were reading or just kind of napping. Occasionally, a clinician would check in on them, a nurse, if they needed something, they could, you know, easily access a nurse. And there's also group therapy sessions. And so, you know, I write a little bit about the types of therapy that people get. Of course, they can get individualized therapy at times, but also they might get art therapy. They might learn how to meditate. They could, you know, talk about their goals for the day or for recovery. And so it's a very kind of unique experience for people who are going through a mental health crisis. You know, the other thing that I should note is that, you know, it's often very hard for people to get constant and kind of continuous outpatient treatment for mental health issues. It's you know, it can be hard for people to get an appointment. That appointment might be weeks or months down the line if you're able to get one. And most people in a crisis can't obviously wait that long. You know, this empath unit I went to has developed really strong relationships with outpatient providers. So often patients will come into the empath unit and they're able to facilitate an outpatient appointment in a day or two, certainly within a week, where someone can follow up. And that gives everyone, I think, much more confidence that they can handle whatever mental health issue they came in with.
Can this specialized unit also give people medications that might relieve their symptoms? I know sometimes in an ER, there's a reluctance to sort of start someone on a very powerful psychotropic drug without, you know, long and detailed history.
That's right. So they absolutely can start medication. Many patients are started on medications in the inpatient, in the empath unit, rather. And because they have close relationships with outpatient clinicians, they're able to kind of detail what they've started and make sure that person has appropriate follow-up in the near future. But the goal is to do kind of a comprehensive evaluation to deliver some form of maybe therapy. And then if a person needs it, to start them right away on medication. And those types of things allow a lot of people to at least stabilize in a day or two. I wrote a little bit about how many fewer patients require going into an inpatient psychiatric hospital when they come through the empath unit compared to before the empath unit's construction. So you can imagine if you don't do these things, if you're not able to do kind of a thorough evaluation, you're not able to engage patients in therapy, you're not able to start them on the medications and maybe adjust those medications after you see what you're doing, the default position is to say, hey, this person seems too sick to go out. So I think we just have to send them on to a psychiatric hospital. That might take days, that might take weeks to get to.
Sure. And then once they get to that place, clinicians are starting from square one, right? They're just getting to know this patient and what is distressing them.
That's right. And so, you know, they will have to do their own evaluation at that point and get started. And, you know, some of the people I talk to who work in the empath unit and others, they say that, you know, psychiatric hospitalization, even when it's voluntary, even when someone is not taken there against their will, but wants to go because they need help, it can be a traumatic experience. As you can imagine, being in a facility, it's often a very Spartan place. It's a place where your movements and what you can do and when you can do it is quite restricted. It can be a traumatic experience in and of itself on top of the mental health struggles that someone might be experiencing. And so it is good, the extent to which we can avoid that, if at all possible.
Dhruv, what you've described to me about these empath units is interesting because it's so different from the standard experience most of us have in the ER for just about any health emergency. We do a lot of waiting. It sounds like in an empath unit, patients' therapy begins immediately, even if that's not therapy one-on-one with a psychiatrist or psychologist.
That's absolutely right. And so, you know, in a traditional emergency room, you'll certainly get immediate care for very acute medical problems. For things like psychiatric problems, mental health crises, that's much less the case. The doctor that actually came up with the idea of empath units was a doctor named Scott Zeller, and he was working in California. And he was really kind of distressed by this idea that everyone kept pushing forward, was that we just need to build more psychiatric hospitals or psychiatric beds, because he thought that was missing a more fundamental point. And the more fundamental point was we shouldn't waste the time waiting for these beds. We should not say that emergency rooms are unable to care properly for people with mental health crises and have to transfer them elsewhere. We can actually do this during the time that they're there. And so he talks about this idea of, you know, therapeutic dead space. It's just a missed opportunity if you're having someone come in, you're not really doing much for them over the course of days and just kind of shuttling them elsewhere. He says, you know, he told me that, you know, if someone comes with an asthma attack, we don't say, you know, wait here for a day or two and we'll find you an asthma hospital. We treat them right away. But with mental health crises, that's exactly what we do. You know, people often kind of languish in the emergency room for a few days before we're able to actually start treating them in another setting.
So when Scott Zeller had this idea for a different kind of mental health unit in emergency rooms, attached to emergency rooms, he sort of commandeered a space in the hospital where he was working. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, he basically just converted an unused hospital lobby into a waiting room. And so he set this up. He noticed that the lobby wasn't being used for much. Why not use it as a space where you can treat patients with mental health issues? And so he brought in recliners, he brought in snacks, he organized some group activities. He was able to make sure that a psychiatrist or a nurse was able to see patients and start medications within an hour or two. And one of the really interesting things about the model was all the patients were actually in the same area. And so often, I think traditionally people think that that's going to create a lot of chaos. If someone comes in with psychosis, another person comes in with suicidality, another with substance use, that there's no way that you can have them all in the same area. But he actually told me, no, you know, if you create an environment that's like a place of healing, that's a calming environment, actually it can be very soothing for people to be together. That's not to say everyone will benefit from it. Some people, it might be too much for them to be around other people while they're going through something like a mental health crisis. But for a lot of people, he actually found that it is helpful being around other patients and then being right in the same milieu as other clinicians.
The empath unit at KIMS Hospital has these places called sensory rooms. How do those work?
Yeah, so sensory rooms are fascinating. So there's a large kind of communal area, but they also have four sensory rooms, which are smaller rooms off the main area. And those are just areas where people can get away, if they want to be by themselves for a little bit and just kind of chill out. And so in those sensory rooms, you can play music of different types. You can adjust the lighting to make it more mellow, make it different colors. There's a yoga mat in there. There's a recliner. There's a mattress, kind of a very soothing mural on the wall. And so the idea is that if the communal environment is a little bit too much, or if you just want a break from it, you can go in there and have a kind of a sensory experience that ideally is quite calming for someone coming in with one of these conditions.
I don't want to romanticize this because I know that people are in deep distress when they land in one of these units, but it sounds nice enough that people who are starting to feel themselves in crisis and have, you know, some familiarity with this might actually be motivated to go as opposed to doing everything possible to stay out of an ER.
That's right. And I think that's one of the real benefits of this. It's a much more welcoming place than a traditional ER might be for someone with a mental health issue. Kim told me that, ideally people who come in, they don't have to come back, but inevitably, some proportion of people who have serious mental health issues will need to come back. And she hopes to create a type of experience in which it's a positive experience, or at least not a decidedly negative experience. And we should all be striving to create clinical settings that are healing in this way, that are welcoming to people, where people feel wanted, where they feel cared for. And this is a place that is much further along that spectrum towards a kind of more positive vision of what it means to care for people in mental health crises than the way that we've been doing it for decades.
You share the history here of kind of the invention of emergency rooms as they exist today in the United States, and it's really instructive. How did the healthcare system handle emergencies before around the 1960s?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people probably don't realize that emergency departments are a relatively new invention. You know, before the 1960s, most emergencies or urgent care was provided by doctors who might be making house calls. Some hospitals had what were called accident rooms, where medical trainees or nurses might staff them, and they treated mostly physical traumas. And there wasn't even a senior doctor on site. If they needed someone, they would end up coming and getting one. That started to change in the 1960s. There was a doctor in Virginia named James Mill, who is thought to be the first doctor that kind of brought together a 24-hour, fully staffed emergency room at this hospital called Alexandria Hospital. And that new model really spread across the United States. And so the idea was that if you had an acute illness, you could come to this place, you could get timely care, and you would get it from experienced practitioners. Over the next couple decades, that obviously became the dominant model for emergency care. In the 1970s, emergency medicine residencies started coming into existence. The American Medical Association recognized emergency medicine as a distinct specialty. Before, it was mostly staffed by internal medicine physicians or surgical surgeons. And so the kind of advent of emergency care as we know today happened in the late 60s and early 70s. And now I think a lot of people take it for granted. But what is important to note is that even through this process, emergency rooms were mostly devoted to physical or medical conditions. They were not places traditionally where mental health care was at the foreground of what they were doing. And that's why I think these other types of models like empath units are potentially such a better alternative.
Yeah, I mean, the skill set required of someone to work in the emergency department is truly, breathtaking. The number of emergent conditions that people are able to diagnose and treat quickly and effectively. Is the reason that these folks don't get a whole lot of mental health training that in the earliest days of emergency medicine, there were still a lot more state mental hospitals around for people?
That might be part of it. Certainly 50 years ago, there's a lot of public psychiatric beds in the United States, and there's many fewer today. But as you say, there's any number of things that a physician in the emergency room needs to contend with. They need to basically be able to deal with every kind of type of medical issue to some extent. And so there's a lot to pack into training programs. And I also think that, the idea that mental health crises require emergent care in the way that they do, that has been evolving over the past, 10, 15, 20 years. And the third point is that actually the number of emergency department visits for mental health reasons, the proportion of those types of visits has really increased over the past 20 years or so. And so in the past, there might not have been as many patients who come in specifically for mental health reasons. And now there are, as I say, something like 1 in 8 patients ends up in the emergency room for a mental health crisis. And that number was much lower in the past.
So if ERs typically ended up treating mental health crises in a manner similar to treating physical or medical crises, what does that look like? What did that look like in a kind of traditional ER setting?
Well, traditionally, people who come in with some type of mental health problem, many of them, at least, if you're having hallucinations, if psychosis, agitated or aggressive behavior, a clinician might look for a medical cause for those symptoms. You know, people who have infections, people who have taken some type of medication with a psychoactive side effect. If you have, you know, hyperactive thyroid, maybe you are more prone to agitation or aggression or feeling unwell. So you might look for a lot of medical problems for these types of mental health issues. And once those things are ruled out, then the doctor might say, okay, maybe this is a primary psychiatric issue. And if there is a mental health practitioner on site or available, then that's when that person might be called in. But even, you know, in that scenario, there may not be a mental health practitioner, or there may not be much that is done or able to be done while someone's in the ER or in a traditional hospital, and they really need to move on to a psychiatric facility to truly treat whatever problem they have.
So Scott Zeller, the person who came up with the idea for this empath unit, the very first one in California, started to talk about this idea at conferences and sort of described to people how it was working. People told him he ought to, patent his idea so that he'd have to get paid every time another hospital did this.
Yeah, so that was more around the name empath. You know, this started actually in the Alameda Health System in California, which is where he first started to implement this idea. So it was called the Alameda model. He ended up calling it the empath unit, and people really liked that that name. He was initially advised that he should try to copyright the term, but he really liked it. And he thought that if he did, fewer hospitals would want to use the name, and it might limit actually the uptake of this type of model. So he ended up not copywriting it at all. You know, I should just say that the empath unit, it stands for emergency psychiatry assessment, treatment, and healing. And so it does kind of have a real meaning to it. And he describes it as it happens in that order. You know, if you have an emergency, the first thing is assessment, the next is treatment, and ideally the last thing is healing that stems from those first two things. And so it does really nicely capture what these units are about.
So, Dhruv, how did this model start to spread to other hospitals around the country?
Well, you know, the way Zeller put it to me is that people started to hear about it. I mean, the first Alameda location of this really had some impressive results. And so before, a lot of patients who came in to emergency departments had to stay overnight, maybe several nights. They were able to really decrease that by transferring them to the empath unit and improving kind of the flow of patients through the emergency department. In a lot of emergency departments, patients with mental health crises are restrained in some way. They might be isolated in a room. They might actually be physically restrained. They may be what's called chemically restrained, which means giving medications to calm them. In Zeller's unit, many fewer patients had to undergo those types of things. And he says that's, you know, in part because so many more of them were getting immediate treatment. The environment was a lot calmer. They were able to see a specialized clinician much, much, much sooner. And so wait times in the emergency room, which is a problem at, you know, hospitals across the country, that these emergency rooms become so full with patients, those dropped substantially, at least at this hospital, you know, from 10 hours to less than 2 hours for patients who came in with mental health problems. So as you can imagine, a lot of these things were very attractive to other hospitals as well. And so he started working with hospitals around the country, advising them about how to construct these types of empath units. And he's told me that since then, he's not even always involved with the construction or the planning of these types of units. He might just hear about them on the news or through a Google alert or something like that. And so it's a model that is attractive for the ways in which it's able to care for patients and improve the flow of patients through an emergency room.
I have to imagine cutting down on that wait time for patients who may not want to be there in the first place is really helpful as well. I mean, it's really hard to get someone who doesn't want to be in the hospital to begin with to sit for 10 hours in an emergency room.
That's right. I mean, it's a huge improvement, both for the patients with mental health problems who may not want to be in an emergency room for that long. Many of them may just leave before they're even treated because they're waiting and don't feel like they're getting the care that they need. But also for other patients who don't have mental health issues, who may be coming in for any number of other problems, you know, obviously a packed emergency room doesn't help them get care any sooner either. And so from the perspective of the hospital, the clinicians at the hospital, and all the patients who end up there, relieving some of the pressure in an emergency room can be tremendously beneficial.
The safety thing is really extraordinary as well. And this is just an anecdote, but in Kim Mittling's first job in an ER, a more traditional mental health unit, patients would occasionally attack staff members and staff members would get hurt. I mean, all of that can put kind of everybody on the defensive, can it?
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, Kim related a story to me in which she was standing outside a woman's room in this locked mental health room unit. And the woman, you know, had some mental health issue and ended up grabbing her by the hair and flinging her to the ground and actually striking her before hospital staff and security guards were able to kind of, you know, restrain her. But she said something that was really striking to me. And she said, you know, I think all of us or almost all of us who worked that job were assaulted or nearly assaulted at some point, which is just remarkable if you think about it. I mean, these people, the clinicians are also putting themselves sometimes in dangerous situations. And I think, you know, one of the points here is that the environment in which we care for people really does matter. You know, if you have a stressful environment, if it's chaotic, if it's loud, if it's isolating, all these things make things worse for patients, but also make things worse for people who are working in the emergency rooms. And so, so having a calm environment, making sure that people feel cared for, giving them a sense of autonomy, all these things can reduce this type of behavior for people who are coming in.
So, Drew, you went with Kim Mittling to the hospital where she works in Minnesota, and you just observed the ways that staff and patients interacted. And something that struck you that shouldn't be so strange is that nurses and patients spoke to each other like regular people in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a striking thing, and a little bit of it is tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, just the idea that a patient can get up out of the recliner, go up and say hello to the nurse who's sitting behind a desk out in the open, say, you know, can I chat with you for a second? The nurse says, you know, sure, I'll be over in a minute. Or can I, you know, do it? Could you grab me this or that? It just struck me as such an ordinary experience. Like you might go to a library and ask the librarian, oh, could you help me find this book or something like that? And it's just so different from the way that a lot of interactions happen in the hospital where patients are, you know, ringing call bells and maybe it takes half an hour or an hour to get their pain medications or they need to ask for help or permission in some cases to do this, that, or the other thing. And, you know, a lot of that is for people's safety. A lot of that is because hospitals are very busy places. At the same time, you know, creating an environment where people feel like they have autonomy, where they feel like they can interact with other people as kind of humans is just so powerful. And that's one of the things that really struck me when I visited.
I'm bringing up here something that you don't address in the piece, so feel free to stop me if it's not something you're prepared to talk about. But reading this, I thought about the fact that, you know, across the country, because there is a shortage of mental health care available to people, county jails are like the mental hospitals of last resort in many parts of this country. These are not places set up to provide autonomy or soothing interactions. I mean, I'm wondering if units like this could really make a difference in county jails.
You know, it's a good question, and it's certainly something that I think warrants piloting and testing, because they are such different ways in which people in crisis can interact with clinicians and potentially get better. And some, you know, Very high and distressing percent of mental health in the United States is treated actually in jails and prisons. A lot of people who end up in the criminal justice system have an underlying medical problem that may have contributed to the reason that they are there. And so providing some level of mental health care, something akin to what we're seeing with empath units, I think is certainly something that requires, you know, for further attention and potentially exploration.
So you watched as Kim interacted with the patient brought to the hospital with some really concerning symptoms, right? Some paranoia, hearing some voices. Talk a little bit about what you saw in them just talking to one another.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously there's a communal space, but there's also kind of counseling rooms. And so this woman that I call Emma in the piece, she was a young woman who came in with paranoia and depression and anxiety and some suicidal thoughts. And Kim was able to take her to a consultation room and just have a very calm conversation with her and just a masterful kind of display of showing empathy and also making someone feel heard. And because it wasn't an emergency room setting, it wasn't like that had to be the end of their interaction. You know, she said, you know, if you need to talk to me again, I'm here, let me know. Over the course of the day, this woman, you know, who could barely make eye contact with Kim at the beginning, you know, she participated in one of these art therapy sessions. She, you know, I saw her talking to some of the other patients who were in there. And I connected with Kim a couple weeks later, and she told me that, you know, Emma, this woman did very well and ended up being discharged and had good follow-up and was a real kind of success story. And so that's the type of care that is much more able to be provided in one of these units.
So art therapy might sound like just a way of filling time, but there is definitely a strategy behind this. Can you talk about some of the projects you saw people working on?
Sure. I mean, you know, so there's all sorts of kind of sessions that are led in these empath units, or at least in the one that I visited. You know, one of them involved painting the kind of outside of a mask with glitter and paint, and that's kind of the face that you try to present to the world, and then writing on the inside the way that you usually or really feel. You know, it might be anxiety, it might be depression, it might be any number of things that you're hiding from the world. The day that I visited, they worked on what are called worry stones, where they would paint stones, they would decorate them in any way that they wanted. And you know, some, not everyone, it's not for everyone. I mean, a lot of the patients didn't want to participate, but some showed up. Some of them were more into it than others, but it was really a way just to bring people together in kind of a place where they could interact, they could do something soothing. The person that was leading the session walked them through kind of different things that they could do with the stones, but also, you know, just having a conversation with one another. And that kind of community, I think, for the right type of person can be really helpful.
Okay, so then we have to get down to the brass tacks question of how you code this sort of thing for billing. This has been an issue for hospitals.
Yeah, so, you know, these types of units, at least in the short term, will probably not make money and will probably lose substantial amounts of money. You know, the unit that I visited, in fact, was basically subsidized by other departments in the hospital and also subsidized by donations because people felt it was an impressive unit. But some of the empath units I talked to, they might have gotten grants from local governments, from counties that feel like this is a really positive step in the right direction. Others of them have already shut down. They didn't have enough staffing and money to do what they need to do. Part of that is just because of the way that we pay for healthcare. You know, a lot of payers, a lot of insurers will pay for kind of one-time or discrete evaluations for someone in a mental health crisis. They don't pay for the type of ongoing holistic care that's needed to care for people over the course of potentially a few days while they're in these types of units. And so it is a really challenging thing to think about, how are you going to pay for this? Now, one thing that I should mention is that it does seem that when people are cared for in empath units, it prevents a lot of psychiatric hospitalizations. which can be very, very expensive. And so if you have the right payment model where you take into account the downstream savings that result from caring for people more effectively upfront, that might be a way to get around this issue of payment.
So, Dhruv, talk a little bit about how someone could find a unit like this close to where they live if they have someone they care about who experiences a crisis. I mean, is there one of these in every city in the U.S.?
There's certainly not one in every city in the U.S. There's probably a few dozen around the country right now. There's no comprehensive list of empath units at this time, but the best estimates we have are probably in the few dozens. I think that will change in the coming years. There is some momentum behind expanding this model. There may be hundreds, at least more than 100 in the next few years, and that will make it a lot easier for people to find. For now, some of it is ad hoc. People may have heard from a family member, a friend, an acquaintance about a good experience in an empath unit. I spoke with one person, who is the wife of someone who ended up in an empath unit. She happened to be a nurse at an affiliated hospital and kind of heard about an empath unit in that way. Certainly looking online to see if there's such a unit or something similar in your area could be one way. But for now, I think one of the reasons I wanted to write the article is to bring attention to this model, because I do think it's a better model than what we currently have, but there's just not enough of them available, nowhere near enough for the amount of people that need it.
Did you talk with people working in these units about like burnout rates and how they compare to working in a more traditional mental health unit within an ER?
Yeah, I talked to Kim and I talked to others about that. I don't think there's kind of hard empirical evidence about rates of burnout and turnover just yet. It is a relatively new model, but certainly anecdotally, it seems like people who work in these units who are dedicated to this type of work have a much better experience delivering care, that they may feel more fulfilled at the end of the day. They feel like they're able to help people in a way that they're not able to help people maybe in an ER or in a jail setting. And so from that standpoint, it does seem like a much more professionally fulfilling way to go about delivering care. You know, I should say that not every patient will improve, of course. A lot of people have significant mental health issues, significant substance use issues. There's still a lot of challenging times in these units. Kim told me about patients who either refused care or were not getting better. One patient who didn't have a good experience in the unit, had to go back to the regular emergency room. So these aren't a panacea. It's not like you walk into one of these units and you're magically healed. But they are, I think, a real step in the right direction, both for patients and for clinicians.
Is anybody talking about pediatric versions of these units? It seems like it might not be appropriate to put like a 9-year-old in with adults, but the setting itself sounds like it might be better than a standard ER for children as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I haven't heard personally about a lot of work in the pediatric area along the lines of empath units. But I think more generally, pediatric floors that have been on medical floors, they do have a lot of these principles in place already. You know, I walk on a pediatric floor and I compare it to the adult floors that I work on, which are so bare and often kind of so sterile. And then you go to a pediatric floor, they might be a musician playing music. There may be a place where kids can paint or play. There may be other activities. It's just more colorful. So I think there's a lot of principles that from pediatric floors we can apply to adult floors, but also for children who are experiencing mental health crises, this type of model, I think, could be very effective for them.
Will you talk a little bit about how just healthcare workers have to take care of their own mental health?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think that it's any secret that rates of burnout among healthcare workers have increased a lot over the past few years. Part of that is due to the COVID-19 pandemic and what a lot of healthcare workers went through during that period. But more generally, I think healthcare has become fast-paced. There's a lot of administrative burden. There's a lot of data entry. There's a lot of frustration about not being able to meet either the medical or the social needs of patients. And so the kind of health and well-being of the clinical workforce is really important if we want to continue to have a strong healthcare system that cares for patients in the way that I think we want it to.
As a professor, how do you help your students think about the need not only to care for other human beings in their work, but to care for themselves so that they can do that work?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is having the right mix of things in your workday. And so, you know, there's an interesting study that came out that basically showed that physicians who spend at least 20 or 25% of their time on what they feel is most valuable to them have much lower rates of burnout compared to those that aren't able to get that percent of time. And so, you know, one thing might be to make sure that everyone feels like they're getting some minimal amount of time on really fulfilling work every day or every week. The other thing that I think is really important to recognize here is that, you know, we often think of innovation in terms of drugs and devices and procedures. Like those are the things that are most important in medical care. Those are the things that make a difference. But actually innovation can be much broader than that. And we see that with something like the Empath Unit, but more generally, you know, innovating in terms of making the process of delivering care and receiving care more therapeutic, more healing, whether it's through physical spaces, whether it's through digital healthcare, whatever it might be, I think really thinking innovatively about how do we create the type of environment where people can engage in healing therapeutic relationships.
Dhruv Kular is a physician, an assistant professor at Weill Cornell Medical College, and a contributing writer at The New Yorker, which published his article, Reinventing the ER for America's Mental Health Crisis. Dhruv, I really appreciate the time and the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram by searching for KERA Think. You can also search for KERA Think wherever you like to get podcasts, and you'll find ours. You can subscribe for free, or you can listen to it at our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.